The Around the NFL Podcast has the vapors.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room full of heroes. Colleen Wolf, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
And girls.
I'm just so happy I don't have to do that weird, awkward ISO cam thing where I don't know
can
what
we
to do.
It TD, is there any way to do that anyway? Just an awkward
we're
ISO on
we're
Colleen?
We're doing it. Here we go. Here we go.
It's yeah. No, it's so
and
an
awkward too. ISO.
Hey! And then I do one of these, and it's weird.
If you're listening to the podcast on the way to work, or if you're pumping iron, and you want to see an awkward ISO, check out YouTube.com, where you can watch this whole episode. You can see Colleen trying your best
there
to overcome
awesome.
The awkwardness.
Yeah, I know. I don't really, yeah, it's weird.
The wolf woman, you usually sit in with us for a portion of the podcast.
I do.
But with Mark Sessler in London with Connor Orr, and we're going to get to them a little bit later via the phone. You're going to sit in the entire show.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I would imagine there's a lot of nerves coursing through you right now.
No. No, not at all.
Little butterflies in the old stomach.
I did have a cookie before I came up here, so maybe that's what that is. But yeah, no, I'm fine.
Is it true that you swallowed tobacco juice on your way to the studio?
I was questionable before the podcast, but I did play.
Okay. So, Colleen's here. Thank you for joining us. A very busy day on Sunday. Colleen, you were on the NFL Game Day Blitz.
Yep.
The Couch Show with Dave Damashek.
Uh-huh.
How's that going?
NFL Now, Game Day Blitz. It's good. We did all sorts of stuff today. We got up, walked around a little bit, so that was good.
That's called exploring the space in the studio.
Uh-huh. It was fun. And then David Nickel, he brought his son over dressed as a football, and Sheck kicked a field goal with him.
That sounds potentially litigious.
It was fine.
Or like
because it was
franchise.
All for NFL Now.
Dave's great with kids. So this is our Sunday night, our flagship show, I like to call it, Chris, as you know. Our weekly recap, this one, week 7. Hubba hubba, we are rolling. And we got a big show this week, and we're going to a lot of games to get to, but none bigger than the showdown in the AFC East between the New England Patriots and my New York Jets. We'll talk about that. It did live up to the expectations. It was a very good game. Maybe not the ending that I wanted, Greg. A little different in your case, though.
Okay, you've recovered, though. You seem you're a little down in the dumps.
Was it a little awkward watching the game?
We'll get to that. As I said, Mark and Connor from London, we're going to get them on the phone, talk about both the game the Bills and Jaguars played, of course, early this morning, and the big tweet up at a London pub where I've been told an estimate of 50 to 70 listeners were at the bar with the heroes.
Wow.
Good. How about turnout. That?
50 to 70,000. That would be crazy.
So you're disappointed as the
no,
boss.
No, it was great.
Greg, not
I'm looking
impressed.
Forward to hearing more.
And then finally, Andrew Luck's struggles continue. You know, as we're going to go through all the games, we'll get to the Colts and Saints. And Andrew Luck maybe had a nice statistical day, but doesn't mean he had a good day. So that's all the stuff we're going to get to, and a lot more. So why don't we get going?
Please.
We'll start, yes, at Gillette Stadium, where the Patriots, yes, remain big brother in the AFC East. Tom Brady led New England on 2 fourth-quarter touchdown drives, the difference in a 30-23 win over the New York Jets. This was the game where the Jets were up by 5 points in the fourth quarter. They seemed to be in good position, but Tom Brady still exists. And that's the difference in this rivalry. It's not Rex Ryan's fault or Herm Edwards' fault or Todd Bowles' fault. It is the Patriots have perhaps the greatest quarterback ever, still in his prime at age 38, and he led against the number one defense, just like he did against the number one defense last year in the Super Bowl. In this case, it was the Jets' turn, getting 2 touchdowns put on him in the fourth quarter. Brady surgical in this game, Greg Rosenthal, looking every bit the MVP through week 7 in my mind. The Jets did their best. They hung with them. It's a moral victory if you want to look at it that way. Disappointing for me as a Jets fan because I thought they were right there, but the difference is number 12.
Well, for the first and last time in his career, Tom Brady led the team in rushing. And
15 yards.
That just shows, though, that they didn't even bother to run, and when they tried a little bit, it didn't work. They don't have Deion Lewis in the game, so James White gets almost all the snaps at running back. They survive that. And I've been thinking about this a lot lately because I was thinking Tom Brady was declining in 2012. It was like 3 years ago when we thought he started to go down, because we're just trained to believe that players are going to get worse when they're 35, 36 years old. It's very natural.
It's normal.
And yet he's really throwing a perfect game right now for this season. Obviously, his numbers, you know, yards per attempt aren't as high in this game as they're going to be, but he was playing a great defense, and he got 30 points, and they got the fourth quarter comeback in the win. But he's essentially, what is he now, 16 touchdowns, one interception, and the interception was a drop from Julian Edelman. He's essentially having, like, throwing a perfect game.
We noticed he remade himself over the last few years. He's much more nimble in the pocket than he was a couple years ago. And we noticed this last year when they played the Broncos, the difference between Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and their pocket movement. In that win over the Broncos last year, Manning couldn't move in the pocket, and Brady looked as nimble as can be, and he's looked even more nimble this year.
Not to mention he's got a hose. I mean, people have been waiting for his arm to fall off, but his arm is still top-notch. It's one of the best in the league.
And he dealt with a lot of drops, too.
10.
Yeah.
Which is an astounding number. 5 alone from Brandon LaFell, who was activated from the PUP list.
Okay, so that's why his yards per attempt was bad.
Could not catch. So really, he could have been, you know, 40 for 50 or whatever it was. I mean, it was just such a great performance. And they ran the ball 9 times all game, and people talk about how it's important to have balance and all that.
And 4 of those are Brady.
And yeah,
I assume a couple were the kneel downs.
No, there was no kneel down. But we'll get to that too, because Brandon Marshall played a factor in that. Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick have the confidence, and they have something very few coaches can say, which is, we can't run the ball. Tom, take care of this. Win the game. And he could do it against a great defense. I mean, it's so frustrating to watch it as a Jets fan. I mean, I've been watching this stuff since 2001 or whatever it's been. And when he says things in the media like, I could play 10 more years, and he's playing at this level right now, I legitimately get nervous that Tom Brady will be beating my favorite team for 25 years.
I can tell right now. I always know when Dan Hansis is upset, because he really gets into it, and he gets a certain look on his face. It's like serious Dan comes out.
And
I just really wondered during this game, what was going on between the two of you? What was the dynamic like?
Well, you asked me that over at the Damashek, the couch show, and it's interesting because I'm the one that's covering the game, quote unquote. So I'm the one watching it, and Greg has his boss duties, so he's watching other games.
Well, we also sit apart. I'm in the middle of the room, a lot going on over there.
You admitted it, you know, as much after the last Super Bowl that. That was like the cherry on the top of the sundae. And no matter what happens going forward, you don't really care. So
that's not what I said at all. I said, I'm just good from here. They've done enough.
Exactly.
Nothing's going to crush me.
That informs your fan experience, and it changes the dynamic completely.
But I still was nervous kind of watching how this game was laying out. Then again, we're at work, and I'm covering 2 other games. And I'm also, you know, managing our entire news thing, so we're paying attention. I'm just saying,
we're
half paying attention to the game on some level. The thing that gets me is Dan running over after they, you know, score the first touchdown or they take a lead at some point, and he just starts dancing around the room and shoving it in our news director's face, Dave Schott, who's a big fan, and just being like, yeah. And the thing that gets me, and
does Schott not deserve it, by the way?
No, he totally deserves it, and most Patriots fans do as well, but. The thing that gets me about Jets fans is no matter how many times, you know, they pull the football away from him, like, there was no doubt in Dan's mind that the Jets were going to win this game and that this was the time. And they were all feeling so good about it.
It sounds very throne of sleaze, this opinion to have. Yeah, because I am, listen, the last true fan standing on the Around the NFL podcast, as I've said.
True.
And the bottom line is, I never give up on my team. I believe they're finally going to get over the hump.
I can testify there were quite a few fist pumps and oh yes coming from.
I was very excited, and I wasn't obnoxious all game. I got excited at one point, but I kept to myself. Brandon Marshall has been the key to the Jets offense. Him and Chris Ivory this season, he's been so great on a weekly basis. But one thing I'll say, and he is on his fourth team despite being a borderline Hall of Fame candidate at this point of his career, is he does one or two things, whether it's physically or mentally, almost every week that makes you scratch your head. In this case, he had a drop touchdown on third down early in the fourth quarter that really obviously cost the Jets 4 points on an easily catchable ball. Ryan Fitzpatrick should have had 3 touchdowns today and no interceptions. It's a physical mistake. It happens. But then another mental error. On the last play of the game, the Jets kick a 55-yard field goal, and then they recover the onside kick. So I'm excited. Greg's, you know, not even paying attention.
I was watching it.
And they... you know, Fitzpatrick drops back, completes a pass around the 35-yard line, 8 seconds, 7 seconds, 6 seconds. The Jets race up. Brandon Marshall went downfield, jogging back, not aware that he needs to get to the line, doesn't get set. They spike the ball at 1 second, but it's an illegal procedure. Game over. That can't happen. And he tweets after the game that I should walk home to New York after what happened today. But it's like, same thing happened when he said this is the stupidest play in history with his lateral.
Been happening for 10 years.
I mean, these things, I guess that's part of the Brandon Marshall experience.
It's part of the Ryan Fitzpatrick experience, too, because I don't think Tom Brady makes that throw. That was a very risky throw to go in the middle of the field, and it was only like a 10-yard gain for very minimal gain, and then they were snapping the ball literally with 1 or 2 seconds. When he threw that pass, everyone in New England, certainly everyone on the sideline, Bill Belichick's thing, thank you, Ryan Fitzpatrick. So he deserves a little bit of
it. They're playing for a Hail Mary, which they didn't. There wasn't a lot of time left after the recovery. I think there was around 15 seconds, but they could have maybe done a sideline out pass and given them a little bit more time.
They could have tried to run a couple more plays at that.
Potentially, no timeouts. Any other things in this game? Chris Ivory had a bad hamstring, hurt it on the first play, so that was.
They really needed him too.
I mean, for him to be compromised in this game,
they
was
were
not
dominating.
Great.
But that's part of the Chris Ivory experience.
That's true.
You can't expect him to play 16 games, and that's why he's one of the most valuable running backs in the NFL.
By the way,
because there's such a drop-off between him and Bilal Powell and Zach Stacy.
I do admit, though, the Jets should be a little higher on that old watchability rankings, which was scientifically done. But maybe it didn't take into account everything going on there. Marcus Gilchrist, I've noticed, has played very well for them.
He went for a ride today on Gronk.
Yeah, that's true.
Gronk had a career-high 11 catches. You know, he's so great.
This is why the Patriots are the best team. They can play any style you want against the defense that calls for it. They'll spread you out like the Jets and the Bills. And they'll win with Amendola and Gronk. And then against a team like the Colts, they'll play power football and they'll win with Gronk and Blunt. I mean, they can play any style you want.
And when they play a team like the Jets, you said it, it's not just having confidence, hey, here's the ball, Tom Brady, we're not going to bother to run the game. That just still takes a different sort of mindset that's just, we're going to approach every game totally different, that just most coaches, I don't think, ever have the confidence.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I thought Todd Bowles at the end of this game, too, just his facial expression when he was walking off the field, I think he really thought that they were going to win that game.
They were close.
They played well.
And he looked so upset, you could see it.
I don't buy into the moral victory angle, which I've heard some Jets fans, and I've seen it on Twitter, but
they outgained them.
They weren't that far behind in terms of as a team, but the difference is at the quarterback position. They're good. Jets are good.
They're good.
Patriots are great.
I agree. The Jets are good.
Moving on. All right. So we talked about the Jets and Pats. Let's talk about
it. Speaking of good teams.
Yes. Well, we'll see about that. High octane humiliation time in Miami, where the Dolphins hung a 40 burger on the Texans in the first half en route to a 44-26 victory. The stat line that stands out above all others here, Colleen Wolf, the Dolphins had a 35-0 lead before Houston had its first yard.
Wow.
Yard.
Wow.
There's no way that's ever happened in NFL history.
Never happened before. Don't even need to check Elias Sports Bureau. Will never happen again.
Ryan Tannehill in this game, too, you guys. Dating back to his last game, he had 25 straight completions, which is an NFL record. Who would have thought that Ryan Tannehill would have done that based on the way that he was playing before last week?
The stat lines are crazy in this game. He was 18 of 19 for 244, four touchdowns, perfect pass rating of 158.3. And I don't think he threw more than a couple passes in the second half.
Joe Philbin is somewhere thinking, what, you couldn't have kept me around to play the Titans and the Texans?
That's what I
Bill Lazor, you couldn't have drawn up these game plans while I was there?
Joe Philbin would have lost to these teams.
No, that's unfair.
They would have. His team quit on him. That means they would have lost.
Look at Feldman's team last year. They went through a similar stretch where they couldn't win a game and then they start winning.
This isn't last year. They quit on their coach.
Dan Campbell, though, my point was essentially Dan Campbell's not going into the room and drawing up the offensive game plans. He'll be the first to tell you that.
I think he's definitely going in and saying, I want more Lamar Miller and I want more power football. Last week they played a lot less out of the shotgun than they had in the last year and a half combined. I think he's absolutely changed.
And one thing he did is play your boy Rishard Matthews every single snap. And he had a great week last week. And, you know, he came through with a big play again today. Jarvis Landry's been playing well all year. I mean, the whole thing with adding Cameron Wake last week was you just added a total zero to someone that's hurting your team on the field to, okay, now we have one of the best pass rushers in the league back again.
He and Sue combined for four sacks today.
Jarvis Landry, too.
Jarvis Landry.
So good.
Looks like a superstar in the rise if they can ever get consistent on that offense. His 50-yard touchdown was a thing of beauty. Well, I think it would be on any top 10 list this year at the end of the season. Lamar Miller, he had 236 yards and two touchdowns in the first half of this
first
game.
First half.
I mean, I've never seen anything like it.
Woo!
And Dan Campbell, they were actually passing the ball up 41-0 at the end of the second quarter, too. Because Campbell, I guess, this is like, make a statement. This is our time to rise.
I heard him say that.
Also because he's not Gus Bradley.
Well, I thought that was really impressive. Not to go back to last week, but that was one of the things I was impressed by Campbell and the team last week is they ran the whole game to set up throwing deep, being very aggressive late in that game, even though they had a big lead last week, which is something that you would see, you know, a smart coach do.
I don't know. What do you do also now if you're Bill O'Brien?
Well, let's talk about the biggest story to me coming out of this game is Arian Foster is going to miss the season with a torn Achilles tendon, according to our NFL media insider, Ian Rappaport. And on one hand, it's like, well, the Texans were already bad. They're 2-5. They've gotten blown out, you know, twice now in the last month where they weren't even remotely competitive. On the other hand, Arian Foster looked really good last week. This is a team people thought would be in the mix. They're only one game out in the AFC South, and losing Foster for the season kind of feels like that's finito. You're done.
Yeah, he just can't stay healthy. It's his third major surgery in 2 years.
And we know he's kind of a different cat, so you wonder how many of these like crazy injuries he could take before he decides, do I really want to keep fighting when my body is telling me something different? And now, Wes, because I know you'll like this, and it might not be the first time, the last time we do it, but here we go. And the disrespect that they show our quarterbacks, I'm tired of that too.
Oh, no.
Because both those kids can play. They just need a chance. And one of them is going to get it. Enough is enough. Every player that is out there, all 90 players, are players that I want for the 2015 season. When you effing guys show up to practice tomorrow, they better be ready to effing go. Ryan Mallett didn't even make the plane to the freaking game today. He had a flight commercial.
If you had to put all the money in your bank account on which player did not make his team's plane this morning, wouldn't he be your guest?
It would be Ryan Mallett.
Yeah, Ryan Mallett would be your guest.
And Brian Hoare is a limited player, and Ryan Mallett's a total goober.
Last time, remember, it was the alarm clock. This time, he legitimately said he got stuck in traffic.
Using all my excuses from when I was like 19 years old.
Oh, stuck in traffic.
Is Houston's coaching staff intact before their next game?
Oh, yeah. I think going into next season, I don't think they could do anything that's going to lose their job just about.
But
I mean, they had a really
be.
Good year one, a bad year two, and in a team, an owner, I think, that's shown that he wants to see how things play out. He did it with Gary Kubiak. He gave him a lot of time.
And, can't win without a quarterback.
Right. And, yeah, to my point, I guess I made a couple weeks ago, but I think it was about Houston. J.J. Watt was the number one player on the top 100 players of 2015 this past year, and his team was losing 41-0 at halftime today. It's like defensive players, you could be great, but you can't dictate the game the way like a quarterback can.
Well, their defense, you know, the quarterback to me seems everyone's just going to blame the quarterback for everything in Houston, and Brian Hoyer is not the reason why they're down 40-0 against the Falcons, you know, and the Dolphins.
And they have some
that's an entire team.
They have some good players on defense, so is it the coaching?
I don't know. Romeo Crennel's definitely not doing a good job. Right? I mean, it's a little bit of everything. I don't think you can put everything on Brian Hoyer. He's played very well the last two games going into
this. Not today.
Nate Washington had a good game, but, I mean,
it was all garbage.
Junk time.
Brent Grimes did a really good job on DeAndre Hopkins.
Before we get out of this, Dolphins are a good team.
Let's see. They got the.
No, they are a good
team. Let's talk about Wes here, because Wes is a little overexcited about
it. The Dolphins.
They got two cupcakes with a rah-rah coach.
What do you want to wait until they start knocking off everybody and then say they're
a
good
give
team?
Them all the credit in the world for taking care of business against two bum teams. Let's see what they do against the Pats.
Well, that's not your measuring stick. If that's the case, then the Jets stink.
No, the Jets
are
good.
They lost.
No, the Jets are good.
They lost to the Pats. You can't use the Pats as a measuring stick for one team.
Be competitive. Be competitive.
Oh, they'll be competitive.
Okay.
They're a different team now.
I'm not saying you have to beat them. Be competitive.
No, they're 3-3. What they also had was a little bit of luck that they got that bye week so nice and early so they get rid of Philbin and change the tires. I mean, they're back to
500. Everything is going perfectly for them now. They needed that luck.
All right, next up, you know, Connor Orr, Mark Sessler in London. You know, the plan was for us to have them on Skype, on the video, and we'd be able to talk to them. Technology, 2015, we're not there yet.
It's still going to be my favorite part of the show.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's video or we got him on the phone, So here we are on the line right now. Mark and Connor, are you there, boys?
Hello.
There we go. And this is, we did get one photo. And if you're watching the show on YouTube, you can check out Connor and Mark. Looks like they're standing in front of a river and holding bags of merchandise. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's the River Thames, you know, so it's a pretty big deal. And we bought some soccer jerseys. We're all in, baby. We're not coming home.
That's right. As TD pumps his fist behind the glass, you went to a soccer match yesterday, correct?
We did. We went to see Fulham, which is, you know, I basically went in knowing literally nothing, but they have a little tiny 30,000 person stadium called Craven Cottage. Is that right?
Yeah.
And it was absolutely the best time I've had in ages. You basically stand outside, get a few pints, and then you go in, and it is utter chaos for 2+ hours.
This is what Mark needed, by the way. He needed getaway, experience something new, take him out of the rut. And
the crushing tedium of life won't hit him hard at all when he gets back.
Oh, no. When he's grinding out hamstring injury reports on Thursday. But forget about that. In the now, you're still in London, and this is what we're going to get into. We'll start with the game, of course, the Bills and Jaguars, a big Jaguars victory. That we'll get into. You guys were at the stadium at Wembley covering. And we also want to, of course, talk about the tweet up that you guys had at a pub in London town. So let's save that for the end. Let's talk about the game first. And this is a game, of course, guys, that the Jaguars jumped out to a 27-3 lead, almost lost all of it. In fact, they did lose the lead late in the game, but then a late touchdown drive. Final score, 34-31 Jaguars over the injury-depleted Bills. What were you guys seeing live from Wembley?
Well, I mean, you know, the Jaguars locker room, I mean, you'd expect it to be like a little bit down because they were up 27-3, but everyone was elated. There were guys dancing in front of cameras, and there were people going nuts because, you know, the sense that I got from everybody was like, let's just win a game and figure it out. Like, you know, we have all 23, 24, 22-year-old kids. Let's just try to get one, and then, you know, and we'll move on.
Well, they've only won 11 since they fired Jack Del Rio, and they're only one game out of first place. So as bad as it was, when they lost that lead and they finally needed a drive, they did come up with one.
That was the biggest thing. You know, I talked to, like, one of the players who had kind of been there for a little bit longer, and he said that Blake's throw took some serious – the quote was, like, serious balls or something like that because
– we call it onions here at Stateside.
Onions, right. Yeah. He'd thrown, like, an awful pick six, like, two drives or three drives before that, and it was, like, another deep route. It was across his body, and he nailed it. It was a great throw.
Then again, we might be talking about how the Jaguars completely self-destructed – and Bortles was a huge reason why, if not for a very shaky penalty call. Mark, I know you were in the Bills locker room, and they weren't too fired up about that.
Well, no, I think that, you know, across the board, you know, Nickel Roby was sitting in his locker. You know, the one thing, the difference between the Jags locker room and the Bills was in the Buffalo room, they got out of there about as fast as possible. And they were out in the hallway taking, you know, personal pizzas to a bus that was getting them out of the country. This went completely
I bet the pizza was
against
great.
What they were planning. And, you know, that call changed the game. I think they would have iced it had they, you know, it was a 3rd and 15. Roby gets nailed with the PI, 17-yard flag, new life for the Jaguars, and it completely changed. All week long, all the Bills talked about was the favorable matchup against the bad team, get to 4-3, get to your bye week, get healthy, and, you know, kill some of these narratives that have plagued Rex Ryan this season. Everything went opposite. Rex didn't even seem angry after the game. He just seemed completely, utterly exhausted.
I'm sure he's drained again because he knows that it's his defense that ended up losing this game. And if you're a Jets fan, you've seen this before. Besides, Rex Ryan's known for his defense, and, you know, there have been some very good defenses in his NFL career, but it's not the first time a Rex Ryan defense has blown a lead on the final drive of the game. Sometimes his defenses can't close, and that's what happened today.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things that, you know, Rex, his defense is going to eventually, you know, he always says it's kind of an unwritten book, and, you know, it's constantly evolving. But clearly something's broken here. I mean, you know, when the players are complaining about it, when Jim Kelly, who's done, you know, everything he could to support Rex Ryan, is going out at charity events and bashing this defense. I mean, you know, I think that it's time to maybe, you know, take a spare moment and really just kind of take a look in the mirror and see what you're doing on defense.
Although, EJ, let's be honest, EJ Manuel lost them the game. The defense, the Bills turned the ball over four times, and the Bills' defense played more than well enough to win for 90% of this game until that last drive. I mean, that 6 minutes, Mark, you wrote about it, was just one of the six craziest minutes we've seen all season. It went from 3-0 to 28-3 in 6 minutes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the takeaway with the fans at Wembley is they, you know, I think when this series started way back when, they would get most excited about an extra point. They're a much savvier crowd, and I think they recognized they were watching a quarterback completely collapse. I mean, it happened all in eight plays, and it was, for all this bizarre narrative about how EJ Manuel is seen as the better option than Tyrod Taylor, and there's this sneaky thing where they want to have him be a starter. That needs to absolutely go away.
Oh, it will.
This game.
I think it will. I think that's safe to say.
Rex said after the game he's 100% confident in EJ Manuel as the backup quarterback.
Well, as the backup quarterback. That's because their third quarterback was on a different team a week ago. I mean, what's he going to say?
Also, I wish you weren't a liar. I'm 100% sure Rex Ryan's lying.
Yeah, I hated that. We were talking about the game. What was it like before the game? You guys were walking around and everything like that, the pregame and all that.
Yeah, I mean, it was totally cool. I mean, there was such like a tailgating atmosphere. I mean, there were streets just like flooded with people, you know, drinking, and like there was like a waffle place that you could like get waffles before the game. Like that was really cool. And like everybody, like there were guys, like we had a podcast listener calling like across, he was like 200 yards above us, and then 2 seconds later, Mark and I were talking, and he arrived out of breath to just take a picture. Like, so it was super amazing. I mean, well, the fans there were just some of the coolest people.
I think that transitions nicely to the second reason for this call, which is Saturday night, your meetup at a local pub in London with some of our loyal and some extremely loyal around the NFL listeners who met up with you guys. And, you know, we were getting some dispatches throughout the evening back in L.A., but tell us a little bit about that. It sounds like quite a scene.
Yeah, I mean, we were blown away because Connor and I, you know, after going to the game yesterday, the soccer game, made our way over.
Match.
And this pub was the match, correct. I'm still learning. You know, this was just a block off where the NFL on Regent, the major party that went on all day long, happened. And we didn't know what to expect. I think we were thinking, you know, listen, I guarantee probably like 10 people show up and they'll be awesome. We'll have a great time. We'll sit at a big table. And we walked into this quaint, rather small pub, and it was absolutely bursting with podcast listeners. And we were stunned. And then I did not see Connor again for 5+ hours because the two of us were at either ends of this bar just having great conversations with these, and you said it, they are loyal, and they were absolutely asking questions about every one of you guys. They knew everything. They want to know about Dan Hansis's hair. They were asking if the boss is an authoritarian figure or if he's a friend behind the scenes. And Wes, everyone wants to know about the island that Wes came from and what it's like to go out for beers with Wes. It was unbelievable.
And Patrick's body, too.
Patrick's body in the parking lot. People knew about David Ealy, the NFL.com editor, were asking questions about his dog and all this other business.
Wow.
I don't even know that Ealy has a dog.
Sounds like you guys were like the Beatles in 1963.
You were flying high, let's admit it, Mark, after you left there, and in a good way. And when you left there, describe your own emotions after you left that bar that night.
We were just a band who made it very, very big.
Honestly, though, that had to be like, you know, pretty surreal.
It was one of my my sister's boyfriend came over too, and just to say hi because he lives in London, and he saw like this line,
humble brag,
people like taking pictures with us, and he was just like, "What the heck is going on? Like, what is this?" You know, it was awesome. I mean, it was one of the coolest things ever I'd ever been a part of.
Wow, it's wild because I was thinking, like, if we did that in L.A., no one would show up in L.A.?
No, nobody would care.
Absolutely not.
We got, I think, there would be
we love you, England.
8 to 10 people for sure. But yeah, that is the great thing about this podcast is that we do have listeners literally all around the world. But the UK audience has been so great to us from the very beginning. Like I'm talking when it was just the ATL Debate Club, there was an immediate connection. So this, you know, hopefully we all eventually get over there and get to experience it and meet people. But this sounds like, you know, a great meeting between human beings, Wes. And this is what it's all about. That interaction, Wes. That's what I'm talking about.
I was gonna say I'm a little jealous. I'm very jealous of Mark and Connor that they got to have that experience, and I hope to do it myself someday.
Yeah.
I would say that like one thing that came, what we were doing mostly was answering questions about the entire group. And the one thing people want to probably in America would say, well, people in London don't know their football. They're probably just complete naives. Absolutely not the truth. Like you could walk into an American bar and there'd be less football knowledge than what we dealt with last night. Mm. These guys are literally obsessed with the game, and we were having great conversations. And the questions they were asking were, like, tough to answer in some cases. I mean, they're plugged in.
They were asking about pro football focus rankings and things of that nature?
Well, as the night went on, there was less analytical talk.
And that that takes us to the final question, I guess, I have, which is Connor Orr, Mark Sessler, better friends or best friends?
The best friends. We're actually getting an apartment together, and we're cutting off all ties with everyone in the U.S.
Well, you guys can hang out in your untucked plaid shirts together forever.
Well, there was a little street that we wandered down after the soccer game, and there's beautiful little apartments. And I texted Simone, and I basically said, "You just start packing those boxes, because we are getting out of the U.S. We're done with America. Bye bye."
This is going to be a crash back in L.A.
No, I like
I'm
it.
I'm worried about this.
When I first got the text, I thought, well, maybe we can do like Men in Blazers in reverse. We got to get some U.K. company. Sorry, NFL. Maybe they'll send us over there. We can go over, be a show over there, just like the Men in Blazers
well, it's
came over
like
here to talk soccer. We go over there to talk football.
Jimi Hendrix broke in England in the U.K. before he broke in America. Maybe we could be the Hendrix of sports podcasts.
I like where this is going. I think there's something to it.
So
Hendrix, I'm not the Hendrix model ends poorly. So we maybe want to.
This is like David Hasselhoff being huge in Germany or whatever.
All right, Connor, Mark, I know you have flights. Connor, back to your haunted mansion. Mark, back to your invisible prison here in Southern California. So travel not safely. True. What's that?
He said not true.
Okay. Travel safely, and that sounds like a great trip and a good adventure, and we can't wait to see you guys.
Cheers.
See you guys.
Cheers. All right. So there you go. Colleen, obviously not part of that.
No, not. I wasn't. Mm-mm.
You do have ties yourself to England.
Yeah. I studied abroad there, so I lived there for like 4 months,
I didn't
know
this
awesome. But the exchange rate was crazy at that time. So, I mean, the pound was like, it was so expensive to do anything, so I didn't really get to do a whole lot.
So you're not a fan of London or our
Oh, I loved That's it. Weird. It was great, but I did go surfing in the Irish Sea. That happened.
Oh.
Yeah, I went coasteering and hiking. I went up to Wales. Yeah, did that.
Is
what's coasteering? Yeah,
and coasteering is like cliff jumping, and also it's like there's all these crazy rock formations, so you climb up, and then we were jumping off ruins.
You went
and stuff.
Surfing.
It's the craziest, yeah.
That's pretty badass. And you went surfing on Saturday here in Southern
I did,
California.
And actually, and I'm just realizing it at this moment, the last time I had surfed before yesterday was in the Irish Sea.
Well, all right, we got it. You're exotic and do exciting things, and you're active. Great job, Colleen.
Dan doesn't like people that go to other. He not only doesn't like to go to other countries himself, he doesn't like hearing stories about
this
other
narrative
countries.
Is getting tiresome. I love the world. There was just a massive tweet up for our podcast.
I know Mark. You know, he texts Simone, "Hey, we're moving over to London." You know, I would love London too. But you know, that picture looked pretty gloomy. I'll take L.A. I was on the beach as well. 85 degrees yesterday in week 7.
Give me the stars and stripes.
Nice.
Mark and Connor looked great, by the way, in that photo where they should have been holding hands almost. It was perfect.
This really is the show.
River.
if you have not watched the podcast on Sunday night yet on YouTube, this is the show, because between Colleen being here, which helps on a number of levels for us, and then on top of it, you get to see the photo as well. It's going to be good. Please watch us.
Yeah.
You can see that little creek that they call the River Thames, too.
Oh, how dare you.
Wow.
I'm not impressed with that river.
Shots fired. All right, let's get back to the games. Let's move it to the NFC, where Teddy Bridgewater threw for 316 yards and two scores, and the Vikings sacked Matthew Stafford seven times in a 28-19 win over the Lions. Colleen, the Lions had an 11-point lead in this game. What the hell went wrong?
The offensive line, went wrong.
That's important.
I mean, they had a season high, Minnesota, had seven sacks in this game. And Detroit, they hadn't allowed that many all season long. So the offensive line completely imploded. Stafford actually needed x-rays after the game.
Took another beating.
Said it was fine. But on the other side of things, we saw guys like Stephon Diggs again have another great game.
For real.
Teddy Bridgewater, I mean, if he could play the Lions all the time, that'd be great for him. He had an awesome game for him. Also, AP, well, he didn't end up being sick, so that's good. He played.
The best part is, the story, and we kind of hinted at it earlier in the podcast, was that on the flight into Detroit, it was a bumpy flight, and Adrian Peterson, and kids, you should not do this because it's gross and also dangerous for you. He takes dip, the chew.
Ew.
And he swallowed it. This
according
is,
to the report that he
according
denies.
According to the telecast, he swallowed it when they hit a bump or when they were landing. His story is that it was some shellfish that he ate that led to a reaction. He doesn't know where the tobacco story came from. But here's what if I were him, that's exactly what I would say too. Like, what? What tobacco story? No, chew. It was just seafood. Yeah.
He said, I'm immune to swallowing dip. I've been doing it for 10 years.
Oh,
I feel like it might have happened.
Well, you can build up an immunity to that?
Well, this did come up in the newsroom, and there was a former baseball player that was like, well, some people do swallow the dip. And I was like,
on purpose?
Really?
That's got to do damage.
I've played baseball for years. I never met anybody who swallowed on purpose.
I don't know if I share this story on the podcast before, but I'll do it real quick. I used to go to all my dad's softball games on Sunday mornings as a boy. And one time there was this guy, like a guy trying to be a cool guy. He had a big wad in his mouth and he was pitching and he accidentally swallowed it. And then within seconds, just started yakking all over the pitcher's mound. And all the kids watching were like screaming and like everybody's like, oh my God.
Oh,
I tried it one time.
It's
and
not good.
I almost passed out from it.
Some people love it.
I had a coach who encouraged me to do it. He was a bad man, apparently, but this was junior year in high school, and I took some Red Man, and I was out there playing shortstop seeing pink elephants. I mean, it gets you hot.
Why was he encouraging you to do it?
Be a man. Have some chew.
Very strange.
Dan's thinking,
this was the
how
80s.
Do I get this back to the game?
Yeah, let's try to steer
Lions
it
fans
back.
Were wanting to throw up after watching another home loss.
I don't get
that's
it.
That's how bad it was. how bad it was.
Yep. Doesn't it feel like they've lost at home every week, too?
It also feels like the Lions, Vikings, and Bears have only played each other this season. Like, that's how the Vikings are 4-2. Mm. I don't know why. It seems like this NFC North is in this strange Bermuda Triangle. This is the second time these two teams have played, so that it's not just a feeling that the Vikings have been in the division a lot. They at least have an identity. I think they kind of know what they are. It might not be that exciting, but their defense is it.
We haven't gotten a lot of good Bridgewater games start to finish this year. I mean, if he starts playing at a more consistent level, and Diggs being a guy that could end up being a player now, a fifth-round pick could be a steal, you put in some AP, this team is a playoff team. I feel like they're one of the wild card teams. They look that way to me so far.
Well, they traded Hodges, a linebacker, 2 games ago. And look what Eric Kendricks has done since then. Led the team in tackles in week 6. He leads them in sacks with 2 in this game. And then look at their last 2 draft classes. 2014 brings you your quarterback. And Anthony Barr, one of the best young linebackers in the NFL. You get Eric Kendricks and Stephon Diggs here. We haven't seen much of Trey Waynes yet, but that could be great back-to-back draft classes.
Linval Joseph is playing pretty well with them. It was a draft pick, a free agent pickup a couple years ago that didn't get a lot of love, but he is getting a lot of money. And they're surviving games where they're not getting great Adrian Peterson games. You know, last week they won a game where he struggled. This week he struggled for most of the game, but then broke off a 75-yard run, and that was basically it for him for the day.
Is it safe to say that he's not quite the same guy anymore?
I think it's the offensive line. He didn't have a chance last week. I didn't see this game yet, but last week he didn't have a chance.
Pretty good, actually.
Yeah. Pretty good, though. I mean, that's not Adrian
Peterson. No, I think it's the line. Adrian Peterson.
I think a lot of times before when I've seen his games this year, he didn't look like he could really reach that next level when he was running. It almost looked like his legs were a little heavy. And on that one long run that he had, he, I thought, reached that speed.
He's always had a little hitch in his giddy up. Yeah. Even when at his peak when he ran for 2,000 yards. So he's almost hard to judge in that spot. But, yeah, maybe some improved line play. Let's move on. The Saints opened up their road matchup against the Colts with 20 unanswered points, then held on. Comeback by the Colts, but ultimately the Saints, a 27-21 win in Indy. Another terrible loss for the Colts. Wes, Andrew Luck threw for 333 yards, three scores, but his stat line was deceiving, wasn't it?
Yeah, pay no attention to the box score. He played terribly. He started out 0 for 5, didn't complete a pass until 9 minutes left in the second quarter.
Wow.
It's the slowest start he's had in a game in his career. And he's regressed. We said last week he's not the same player he was last year. We saw that in week one, and we're still seeing it now. To me, I don't care what the rest of the problem is with the Colts. Andrew Luck is the biggest problem when your franchise quarterback has regressed to the extent that he has, where it's his arm, his pocket presence, which Greg once termed the eighth wonder of the world, and now it's a disadvantage every week.
Wow.
It's crazy to hear Chris say that, too, because, you know, everyone loves Andrew Luck. But to even suggest that Luck had some weaknesses in the past would be worth, you know, 5 minutes scolding from Wes. I mean, he's about as big a fan of Andrew Luck. But, you know, Wes, of course, to his credit, is going to tell you what he sees. And what you see out of Andrew Luck this year is a guy, if it was a different quarterback, would just be getting killed because of the pocket presence, because of the decision-making. Because of the way they're losing games with him, and then they weren't losing games with Matt Hasselbeck, the whole thing is bizarre.
And the Colts keep getting shut out. I mean, of the first half of these games, this was the third time this year. Out of seven games, they've been shut out three times. Also, you have T.Y. Hilton, who, is this a violation? Because I brought it up on the show earlier today. T.Y. Hilton, they're down 20 points, and he scores a touchdown, and he's celebrating. He's still doing his dance. I mean, when you're down 20-some points, shouldn't you maybe pump the brakes a little bit on that, or no?
Perhaps, but there are personal glories to achieve, you know?
You're right, Dan.
That's what some guys are into, the personal glory angle.
We should all take a page from your book.
Yeah, it's true. It's about the team.
Beyond Luck, this team, I think, they were down 21-0. The defense was just going through the motions, allowing Mark Ingram to run right through them. It's a team-wide problem, and I think they got those garbage time touchdowns. Delvin Bro fell down on both of the long touchdowns to T.Y. Hilton. If not for those two plays, I think you might hear some talk about Chuck Pagano.
Well, I was just about to say.
Ian Rappaport said he's lasting to the end of the season. He said that before, and he was first in line to say Pagano is on the hot seat this year.
Those things can change.
And that he's going to last through the season.
Everything's fluid in the NFL.
I was going to say, if you're Jim Irsay, aren't you maybe sitting down with Ryan Grigson and saying, hey, do we have a Dan Campbell on this coaching staff? Like, is there someone
who knows on the staff really well?
that everyone likes, and maybe they could rally around him and save the season? Because let's face it, they might win this division, but this is not a Super Bowl contender right now. Maybe that's what they need to do. They got to do something rash or something desperate.
I think that's crazy. I mean, I'm not even that huge a Pagano fan, but just the success that he's had there and the fact that they're in first place and the fact that the players do seem to love him, that you let him play out the season.
If the players love him so much, how come they keep doing undisciplined things like turnovers, just hordes of ill-timed penalties, and then today, like, going through the motions?
I don't think going to Rob Chudzinski is going to change that, though. I mean, I think you let them play out the season, especially when you're in first place, and see
if
they've had success.
If they have more halves like they did the first half today, I don't care what our guys are reporting. NFL situations are fluid.
A little sandwich talk real quick. Wes, Greg, you have a lock right now with your Andrew Luck won't receive an MVP vote.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Enjoy your sandwich. Wes, your Brandon Cooks wager is in trouble. However,
big trouble.
Your boy, I don't know if Mark Ingram was involved with any wagers or props this year, but he is your boy. He had a big game today.
He did, thanks to the Colts defense. He ran really well.
Well, let's talk about the Saints for a minute quickly. Do we think they're back here in the mix at 3-4?
Their defense is playing a lot better. I tend to think this was on Luck today and the fact that the Colts are a train wreck, but the Saints defense played well. Bro's been good, like we mentioned, for the past month. Stephon Anthony came to play. Cameron Jordan has 5 sacks in his last 2 games.
He's played well this year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little bit of a scary fork week. We'll get into it more on Tuesday, but I'm a little bit nervous. That's all I'm going to say. A couple teams got me a little nervous now.
What about Kihaha? He was good, too.
Kihaha?
He's been good.
Kihaha? He has been good.
I mean, Kihaha.
And the thing that I took from the Falcons game was they looked like the Saints offense. And I know maybe it wasn't perfect here today, but looked like the Saints offense, 450 yards.
Greg getting excited about the Saints.
Nah, they're in the mix. The NFC's going to be tricky to get. To get that second wild card spot. That's the thing. They're still three games behind second place in the NFC South. They're a long way from Madden.
I don't consider the Saints all that frisky for the wild card picture. They're certainly harder to beat now than they were a month ago, but I don't think they're a playoff team.
Let's move back to the AFC. The Chiefs' five-game losing streak is donezo. It's over. Alex Smith threw for 251 yards and a score. Charcandrick West added 110 yards in his first TD, a 23-13 win over the injury-plagued Steelers. West, the Steelers were in trouble when they fell behind and needed Landry Jones to start making plays. Accurate?
More of the same from their play calling and coaching. That they shackle their quarterback, won't let him attempt any passes, go run heavy, and then when they need him, they expect him to play well. But I don't think that's a winning recipe, and it's one of the reasons why the Cowboys went from Brandon Weeden to Castle, because you can't run an offense when you don't trust your quarterback to throw the ball. Mm. And Steelers didn't trust Landry Jones to throw the ball until they were coming from behind. At that point, he had three turnovers.
I feel like the football gods were just saying both of these teams were due. The Chiefs were very much overdue for a win. They've been in all these games. Their defense has really impressed me the last few weeks, playing very well. And while the Steelers got away with a couple here, you go on the road to Kansas City. I mean, it wasn't... To me, the records weren't that important. When Landry Jones was starting, they weren't favored.
That was a tough spot for Landry Jones going to KC. As bad as KC's record's been, they still got some fight in them, or at least they have some guys that can make plays in their building. So I don't see this as a huge upset that the Steelers went down in this spot. And they're 4-3 now?
They're 4-3, so that AFC.
So they're okay.
They're fine.
That 4-3. Tomlin said after the game, I believe, that he expects Big Ben to come back to face the Bengals next week.
Each time you lose these games, though, that makes it, like next week, for instance, we're talking Bengals-Steelers, you have to win that game or the division's over at midseason. You're four losses behind if you don't win that game. So that's what these losses do, that they'll just be fighting for a wild card unless they can sweep the Bengals.
To the AFC West, Derek Carr threw three touchdown passes, and the Oakland Raiders, speaking of four teams, cruised to a 37-29 win over the Chargers. In a game that wasn't nearly as close as the final score indicated.
Correct. It was not. It was 30-6 at halftime. It was 37-6.
It was a blowout.
After
That's
9 minutes
Rosenthal
of the third
saying.
Quarter. It was 37-6 going into the fourth quarter. You know, the Raiders are here, and they're not going anywhere, and I don't think they're going to the playoffs, so I don't think they're going to get us on the fork, but they're a legitimate team, and this AFC West is not great this year, and it was begging for one of these two teams, I think, to step up and say, okay, we're going to be the second-place team in this division. We're going to be in the mix. I think the Raiders are that team. They are, to me, one of the more consistent teams in the league.
Wait.
The Raiders.
Last time we were this high on them was a few weeks ago, and then they went and lost to the Bears.
But I don't think they were that bad. I don't think they're a great team. I think they outplayed the Bears for most of that game. I think Derek Carr is pretty much the same guy each and every week. Amari Cooper is making Derek Carr's numbers look insane. Derek Carr was very late on a long throw down the field, and Amari Cooper just jumps up and turns it into a 42-yard gain. He takes a 5-yard little throw, and then he makes seven people miss and runs it in for 55 yards. I just think it's a good team. Not a great team, but a good team.
The Raiders were bad for years and years and years and years. They finally have now hit on back-to-back first-round picks. First, Khalil Mack, now Amari Cooper, and you're seeing the difference on the field.
You are. And also, luckily, MC Hammer was live tweeting this entire game.
Hammer was?
Yeah. It was Hammer time all the time on this. I mean, he was
the social media center on NFL Sunday Blitz was really enjoying that, I bet.
Yes. No, yeah, exactly.
Apparently, bankruptcy doesn't preclude you from getting a Twitter account. It's free.
It's free, which is great for everybody. But the Chargers, when you look at their situation, they were down by 20 points at home to the Raiders. That is no good.
No, Phillip Rivers started this game very poorly. He would admit it. He did not play well at all in the first half. By then, the game was basically over. He had some ugly misses, an ugly interception, and their defense has been pretty bad overall all season. I've never seen Mike McCoy have any human emotion, but I've definitely never seen him be as angry as he was at the podium with some of the questions after the game. And it just felt like he's gripping that podium a little tighter and he's starting to feel the walls coming in. This is an ugly 2-5 start for a team that has a really easy schedule the next month. So they, in theory, could bounce back a little bit, but this is a bad spot.
But they, I mean, you say they have an easy schedule, but we kind of know who they are. They can get beat by any bad team. On their best day, they can beat a good team. But I don't see them being a team that can go on a run. And Colleen, you know, sitting on a full show, I don't hand these invites out easily.
Right. I know that.
Not like candy on
Halloween. I'm aware. Yeah, no, it was tough getting in here today.
Joke. But you are invited into our conference room where we have coffee and
Danish?
Croissants, Danish. Some bagels, a little lox. Greg, we got everything you could need.
Gewelt wow. fish, is that going on?
What was that? What a great Jewish outreach there. The old lox. Thanks, buddy.
Oatmeal. Everything you could ever want
for breakfast. Fork and teams?
Well, the fork committee will commence conversations early this week, and you are welcome.
That's wonderful.
I'll give you a key card.
We'll talk about the Chargers, the team of ATL. From a year ago.
Let's not talk about them being the team of ATL.
And we could also fork. Well, actually, that's not fair. I just have to say, it had to have been a great moment for Raiders fans there at the game today because they were loud and proud, and they were giving standing ovations to much of the game. Phillip Rivers had to use a silent count again. He really had trouble getting plays off because it was just. It was a party in the second half, and I had to think, like, for those Raiders fans that have been loyal all this time and they're going to games for the Chargers, I mean, it had to have been a lot of fun to just see them, you know, creaming.
It had to have been a lot of fun to watch that insane cut that Amari Cooper put on Jimmy.
Oh,
that was insane, yeah.
And, you know, I got to give credit to any San Diego fans that went to that game after the news over the weekend about the teams moving forward with their quest to be playing in Los Angeles. It's just the situation is getting grim for the Chargers this year. There's no way around it. They're 2-5. There's a lot of unrest in their own stadium situation. It's not a team I see making a spirited run to January.
No, Antonio Gates didn't help the situation either for Phil Rivers today.
Did not help at all. All right, moving on. Let's another. Is it interconference or intra conference? I always get this one.
Who are the teams?
Why not just say out of conference?
I like to go with intra Atlanta.
You don't know
Tennessee.
The difference between the two.
If I know it correctly, I prefer it.
Interconference
battle between the Falcons and the Titans. Matt Ryan threw for 251 yards and a touchdown, and Devonta Freeman ran for another 100 yards, 116 this time. The Falcons edged the Titans 10-7. I don't like that score at all for the Falcons, but they won. Greg. Mediocre performance from Matt Ryan, and there's been quite a few
now this
season. Yeah, I'm
insulted he even got in that little intro you did.
Yeah, I know.
As if throwing for 251 yards is some great achievement.
And there's not a lot to talk about this
struggled.
Game setup. Yeah, go ahead. 6-1, the Falcons.
I would say what they did was, well, it's hard to put a bow on their defense is greater than the sum of its parts, that both quarterbacks were lousy, and after Matt Ryan tried to lose the games to the Titans, Zach Mettenberger did a better job losing it with a late interception to Atlanta. The one difference is Atlanta has a running game. They have Devonta Freeman. You know you're going to get that each week, and that was, to me, the biggest difference in the game.
All you fans of teams want your team to trade for Zach Mettenberger. Good luck.
This is a shot at Greg, by the way.
No,
read right through it.
Greg didn't write a letter to his team saying trade for Zach Mettenberger.
Oh, wow.
Who did that?
The Sizzler.
Oh, come on.
I was worried that I did.
No, right, he has 11 drives today. They scored on one, which is about what he was last year when he had one of the worst drives.
Oh, he stinks.
He had one of the worst successful drive percentages in NFL history, and everyone decided he was a good quarterback.
I think he has potential. I'm not going to back off what I saw from last season. This was a bad performance out of him. He had Charlie Whitehurst disease, a lot of six-yard throws on 3rd and 12, just a lot of pointless drives. The Titans are a tough watch. Right now.
What happened, by the way? We were so excited about the Titans. I know Mariota being hurt doesn't help anything, but here they are, 1-5, you know, not being a team that's fun to watch. A team of ATL nominee not too long ago.
They just had a 4-game homestand, which never, ever happens in the NFL. 4 straight home games, and they lost all 4.
Oof.
And I was thinking, like, it was like the first time in team history they've ever lost a 4-game home.
Wow.
Well, no kidding. I mean, how many 4-game home stands could you ever even have? That might be the first one ever, and you lost all 4. I mean, that's hard to do.
Home stand heat from Greg.
They have Antonio Andrews out there, too.
Yes, Antonio Andrews, they decide, is their primary back. He was the guy.
This is why they judge skill position talent worse than any team in the league, and they have for the last few years.
It's amazing. Two teams in the NFL have 6 wins despite their quarterback.
I wouldn't say that about Matt Ryan.
I mean, he made a lot of mistakes.
He's not having a good year. I can tell you that because our fantasy team, Milana Weintraub, I pounded the table on draft day. Say, let's make sure we get Ryan off the board here. And I'm getting rewarded with like 1 touchdown a week.
Yeah, well, I think he's played solid overall until the last couple weeks.
Yeah, it's really just been the last 2.
He has not played well the last 2 weeks. He threw an interception. They decided to go for it on 4th and goal on the goal line with just 4 minutes left and up 3, which was a really gutsy decision, and he threw an interception on the play. Mettenberger gets them back in field goal range, looked like this thing was going to overtime, and then Mettenberger gives it right back.
It
saved us from a meaningless overtime.
What if they go 3-13? Are they the Titans again? Have they cleared Titans because Mariota's there? But if they still are tough to watch and don't really matter in a sense of the NFL, are they still the Titans?
You gotta wait and see.
I don't think you can go back on it.
If Mariota turns into like the first 6 games at Andrew Luck this year, then yeah, that they might go Titans, but.
It's sad we're even having this conversation.
It's going to depend on how the quarterback plays, like every other team in the league.
Hey, more interconference football.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Get excited, Greg.
I treated myself and gave myself this one, baby.
Todd Gurley rushed for 128 yards, 2 scores, the first 2 touchdowns of his career, leading the St. Louis Rams 24-6 win over the fading Cleveland Browns. Greg, Todd Gurley, just a rookie, but he's had a transformational effect on your boys, the 3-3 Rams.
It's amazing how consistent it is every week that he looks like the best player on the field 3 straight weeks. It's 128 yards rushing. They said even going into the game they wanted to get him involved as a receiver more, and so they did. He led the team with 4 receptions, had 35 yards receiving. There was very little separating these two teams other than the Browns turned it over 4 times on fumbles. 2 of them were McCown, 2 of them from the receivers. And the Rams had Todd Gurley. That was really it. I mean, the Rams won with as little passing for most of the game as you can win with.
I just realized you were being 100% serious when you said you gave yourself a treat by letting yourself watch.
I thought you were joking, too.
No, I was joking. I was in the end. But I was trying to give myself a treat. I thought it'd be fun, but no.
You thought this game would be fun at the Edward James Olmos Dome.
Gurley finished with 163 yards from scrimmage. That was the same as Nick Foles, 163 yards passing. That's pretty much Jeff Fisher's dream.
I thought Le'Veon Bell was headed toward that Gronk, J.J. Watt territory where he's the gold standard by quite a bit at the position. I think Gurley's right there with Le'Veon Bell.
I saw you getting a little Twitter spat about this. Ooh. I don't know. I got to see him be as big a factor in the receiving game because that's not just something like, oh, yeah, Le'Veon Bell's.
But he's a better runner than Bell. That's why I think it's close, because Bell's a better receiver. And I know people who don't watch football will say, hey, you can't say that after 3 games. No, it's pretty easy to see.
I mean, he looks so powerful when he runs that you really can't. You have to take that seriously because he just looks so good right now.
And he can – well, the thing you love is he broke a tackle and then runs 48 yards. But then he also can make people miss in a small space without breaking the tackle. And he went around end for, I think it was a 16-yard touchdown at one point. So, I mean,
he's averaging 6 yards per carry on the season.
He can do pretty much anything as a running back. He makes them legit.
They're one of the...
So don't be hesitant. Say it. He's great.
He's just not... I love Le'Veon Bell.
So do I.
He is so good as a receiver. Yeah. You can't put Gurley right there.
Gurley's so good. I mean, Gurley's a good receiver, too. And he's so great as a runner.
Gurley fever.
Gurley man.
We might see Johnny Manziel, too, start next week.
Yeah, Josh McCown got hurt. Shoulder injury.
Late in the game, he got the shoulder injury. Manziel comes in. We'll see. I mean, now they might have no...
You don't think they go to Austin Davis?
No. Why not? I mean, why?
Giving up on Johnny Manziel entirely.
Manziel was the backup quarterback, and he played today. So that tells me he's the backup quarterback. It was crazy. Mark is lucky he was in London for this game because this did not look like 2 uneven teams. I think the Browns outgained him and found a way to lose 24-6.
That's the story.
They just kept losing fumbles, and whenever they'd have a big play, a penalty took it back. I mean, a Joe Thomas holding penalty took away a huge play.
So you have, speaking of sandwich wagers or propositions, Greg, you have the Rams finishing in 2nd place. It's time for them to start stacking some dubs, by the way. I mean,
this was one of those games we kind of said, oh, this is where we learn about the Rams. Do they win a game they're supposed to? Well, they did.
All right, they won this game. Now you got to win. You got the Niners next week at home. Take care of business there. Get over 500. At Vikings is a tough but not impossible game. And then you got home to Bears and then at Ravens.
I like that.
So you should be in good position by the time you face at Bengals, home to Cardinals, back-to-back weeks in late November, early December. Come on, Greg. Take care of business here.
They're in second place. The season ended today. I wanted to bet.
We don't bet.
Sandwich.
Moving on, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers back in action against the Redskins. And the Redskins fell behind 24-0 in this game. But here comes Wes's boy, Kirk Cousins, throwing three second-half touchdown passes, including the go-ahead score with 24 seconds to play. In the end, it was the Redskins, a 31-30 win. A thriller over the Bucs. Colleen,
yes.
You like that? You like that?
Kirk Cousins, how about him? Three touchdowns in this one in the second half alone. This was his second time coming back on that final drive. Down 24-0. You guys saw the video, how fired up he was after the game. But he looked great in the game, too.
See the video. What are we talking about?
What was it? Some type of gif or something? I don't know. Something went out. But what did he say?
Well,
you like that, right?
Basically, I partly take responsibility.
I was setting Greg up there, but then he left you hang out to dry for a couple
seconds
there.
It's fine. I floundered for a minute.
I take responsibility in part. Redskins fans should thank me for the greatest comeback in Washington Redskins history. Mm-hmm. This team has been around for, 80 years? Wes, even
since
longer.
The 30s, at least.
An insane amount of time, and this was the greatest one ever. And it started when I sent an email to our producer to get a little clip ready of Wes really talking up that he wouldn't fork the Redskins, because I was ready to stick it to Wes and fork him. And then somewhere, Kirk Cousins heard it, and he started going crazy, and he engineers the comeback, and then he has a message for me.
You like that? You like that?
Nice.
Wait, run that
you
back.
Like that?
Yeah.
You like that?
That's like if I played that for my wife, and she'd be like, sports are so stupid.
That's Kirk Cousins.
I just have this blurred image of Cousins.
Yeah, a maniac.
From the actual video.
It's him going to the locker room. He randomly sees.
You like that?
He randomly sees a reporter. At first, everyone thought it's like he's yelling at his critics and really sticking it to them. But he really wasn't. He was just seeing a guy. He just seeing a reporter he knows. And he's just kind of like, he just said, I get so amped up and so crazy after the game. He's like, I've done that before. It was just sort of.
TD, if you got like a. This is a job you could farm off to someone. But if you got a Limp Bizkit instrumental track and then just laid that on top, it would sound like one of Limp Bizkit's hits from the early
2000s.
This game.
It sounds like Will Ferrell when he's like, we can't lose our composure.
And that's the funny thing. He's dead serious, all fired up. But good for Kirk Cousins. But, Wes, who's in a bizarre pounding the table moment on the last podcast, saying that everyone in the NFC East should be forked except for the Redskins.
Well, that was
let's not go crazy that they beat the Bucs today and they needed a last-second comeback.
You guys think that the rest of the NFC East are some great teams.
No, that helps your narrative. That's never been what any of us have said.
Why would you single out the Redskins as
they're the worst?
They aren't the worst.
You can make a choice of who you don't think is going to make it. And I don't think Kirk Cousins is a playoff type of quarterback. I don't think they have enough going on.
You've been crapping on Kirk Cousins all year. And
you
it did
like
something
that.
Today. 300 yards, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions that hasn't been done by a Redskins quarterback in the 21st century.
Well, I just said he had the greatest comeback ever. That's even better.
There you go.
I was back, when
get off his back.
When the
He's
Redskins were
the
having
bye.
Different, racist controversy.
He's going to the bye week. He got Except Jordan Reed back today.
Yeah.
He gets Deshaun Jackson back. He gets some offensive linemen back.
Wait.
He's getting no help from the running game.
It's hard to keep track of all the Chris Wessling rules, because you were just telling us a few weeks ago when we were talking about some good performance against the Bucs that nothing that happens against the Bucs defense counts as anything.
Okay, that's fair.
Oh, yeah!
This is one of my favorite ones, because very rarely does Wes get sucked into a clearly bad team and quarterback.
They are a
so
bad
I'm just
team.
Along for the ride waiting for this to crash and Wes having to eat some good old humble pie. It's coming.
They're a bad team, but I want you guys to single out the other three bad teams in the NFC East.
Well, they can all
here we go. Some scientist heat coming up right now. We got a split screen up on YouTube. This is the show to check out on YouTube. I'll say it again. NFL playlist. Check out. Look at Greg and Wes. Split, bring that back.
Cowboys haven't won in a month.
Let these guys get angry at each other now. Colleen, let's just sit it out.
Yeah,
what? We already did get angry. What else is there to say?
Name calling. Get petty.
I don't like that shirt, Wes.
Whoa!
I'm not sure if I like it.
You like it!
You like it!
I was just saying that. Oh, man.
Anyway, so yes, but a big win for the Redskins, and yes, a very mediocre NFC East. So if you're 3-4, like the Redskins are now, you're right in the middle of things.
Yeah, and then you get a bye, and then you get to go to New England.
Saved
and
from the fork.
New Orleans and at Carolina. You come out of those three games.
Yeah, that's true.
If the Redskins come out of those three games anything better than 4-6, I will get you a sandwich.
Hold on. Let me
Loses the division?
Who loses the division? What do you mean?
Who's the worst in the division?
I don't
Who's
even care. Like, I just the know the Redskins. The won't
I think it is the Redskins. I think Greg feels the same way, but I don't think there's a big difference.
They have Patriots, Saints, Panthers, and you said if they come out
any better, if they go 2-1 in those three games, because if they don't go 2-1, they're going to be 4-6. You know, after 10 games, there's really, you know.
Then they play the Giants and Cowboys, which are easy wins.
No,
I just realized, by the way.
There's no easy wins.
Wes, I did realize.
They just beat the Bucks by one.
You're in a tough spot right now.
Why?
The Patriots are your favorite team. They're your
they're
new favorite.
They're not my favorite
team. Carry the water up and down the hill
because
for
they
them.
Win every year.
You respect them. They're great.
They run a great operation.
But then the two teams that have your most hardcore narratives right now, the Dolphins and Redskins, the next 2 weeks, the Pats get them. That's you got narratives true. On the line, and your number one team.
They don't have narratives. The Dolphins are a good team. The Redskins
narratives
are a bad
hanging
team
in the
a
balance.
Bad division.
The Pats revenge tour. They're going to take out all of Wesleyan's stable of boys. That's
I hate that I'm stuck defending the Redskins because they're a bad team.
Your
they're
stable's
just in a bad division.
Burnt to the ground after Tom Brady's through with it.
It's the same reason I wanted to keep the Jaguars alive because I knew the Colts were a bad, bad football team.
Okay.
All right, let's stick in the NFC East since it's such a fun division to talk about. The Meadowlands. East Rutherford, New Jersey, right off Route 3. Colleen, I know you know the area well.
Oh, I know it.
Dwayne Harris scored on a 100-yard kickoff return minutes after the Cowboys, his former team, by the way, had tied the game in the fourth quarter. It was the key play in a 27-20 win for the Giants over the Cowboys. Wes, the Cowboys are now 0-4 without Tony Romo. They've gone from 2-0 to 2-4. Is this, all these struggles, is this all about the QB play?
Yes, absolutely. And this sandwich you're going to give me for the Redskins, just give it to me for our McFadden Castle proposition, which McFadden, you know, put one on him today.
Oh, yeah. The heat between the scientists. Wait,
yeah, I want to, I should, forget just science.
Oh, you're a little flustered.
You got me flustered because I want to check out something. At a certain point, Wes, you have to be responsible as an NFL.com journalist.
Sorry.
The headline to this game on NFL.com, the second thing in the stack right now, or I believe they've changed it, which is good. They made a good editorial decision. McFadden's breakout game ruined by loss to Giants. Like, that was the big takeaway, was Darren McFadden having a big game. Not the fact that Castle had three interceptions. You could have gotten there. Or the Giants won the game. Or Dwayne Harris, a guy who was on the Cowboys, you know, beat him. The Giants are now in first place. Oh, it was Darren McFadden's big day.
That's the story of the game.
They lost the game.
They won time, dominated time possession, had twice as many first downs, and almost twice as many yards.
The editor-in-chief and Greg coming out right now.
I'm not going to put a punt returner as, like, the story of the game. Sorry.
It is crazy, though. No contract got picked on more than Dwayne Harris because he got a lot of money from the Giants. Being like, why would the Giants pay that much money to the Cowboys punt returner? And wasn't it? I'm sure they would say it's all worth it just for this one play.
Well, Jerry Jones was a little... He admitted after the game, it was hard to see Dwayne Harris being the one to give him the loss.
Mm.
Especially when the next play, well, not the next play, but shortly after Dwayne, they tie the game. The Cowboys come back and tie the game. Castle had a great pass. And on the very next play, Dwayne Harris, 100-yard kickoff return. And shortly thereafter, Cole Beasley, the Cowboys punt returner, muffs the fumble to end the game. And that would have been Dwayne Harris returning the punt if he still played for the Cowboys.
How about Orleans Darkwa today?
Orleans Darkwa.
One touchdown for him. That was nice.
I wasn't watching. I didn't know who he was.
Tulane grad.
I started to get texts from my buddies in New York that are Giants fans. And they're like, Darkwa. And I'm like, what the hell is this all about? Apparently he's someone in the
NFL.
Did you
know it had to do with football?
No, I just thought maybe they were just nonsense or something going on.
It's a great name, for sure.
Well, they're... Rashad Jennings hasn't really made plays all year except that one special teams play he made. He's been really slow as a running back, so it doesn't surprise me that they went to Orleans Darkwa and Shane Vereen over Jennings in most of this game.
Well, and Andre Williams, who they're kind of not really buying into.
Well, he doesn't really.
I will throw that. I don't like this Giants team, but I will throw them a bone here. They are at 4-3. They're in first place, and they're doing it without Odell Beckham Jr. being even close to his Michael Jordan form, Wes, to borrow some of your past analysis. He is not the same guy right now. That is something.
Not?
you have to be very wary of. I mean, I think he was 5 for 33 today, something very pedestrian. So it's a big difference with that team when they don't have a guy that's just tearing apart defenses on a weekly basis.
He would have broken the internet again today because in the exact same spot on the field with the exact same guy in coverage, right here, almost pulled in another spectacular catch, and Brandon Carr got away with pass interference the whole 30 yards down the field. He was grabbing his arm the whole way there.
There's the difference between this year and last right there, though.
Although I feel like I've heard...
Where's the magic?
I've heard that five different times this year that Odell Beckham almost made the catch that broke the internet. There was one on the sidelines that was out of bounds. It's like,
that's all we're going to hear about.
It just happened once.
Which is luck. Last year's catch was luck, too. Hmm.
Wow. It took a lot of skill.
Can you do that 10 times out of 10? No, it's luck.
But he was, when we talked about him all through the offseason, the guy that had, you know, Jerry Rice ceiling type talent.
He's still that guy.
He's just been a guy this year.
We've talked about this. He's drawing more attention than any wide receiver in the league, and it's one of the reasons why Eli Manning isn't getting sacked behind a horrible offensive line.
To your point, though, about a lousy division, I'm not getting too excited about any team who gives up 460 yards to a Castle-led Cowboys team, doubled in first downs.
And I don't...
doubled in first downs. And for the most of the day, the Cowboys look better, and the Giants have gotten a few close wins. They've had a few close losses. You're right that they're all bad. I agree.
And I don't forget the Monday night performance by the Giants either. I mean, the point is, Wes, none of these teams are good.
Thank you guys for admitting.
And that is not something that's needed to be admitted. We've all been on the same page with that. It's just the Redskins are a little bit worse. We should be forking somebody in that division.
Right, somebody has to be forked.
You know, as a new member of the Fork Committee, it's a big spot for you. Where do you come down on the whole Redskins, NFC East?
Redskins gate, I think.
A lot of pressure here, but
just speak your mind.
Yeah, no, I mean, they definitely looked better today, and I think their defense, that front, they've been playing well. It's tough when you don't really have a running game to get going when you're playing from behind a lot. So it's sort of hard to get a temperature on them right now. But you could say that about
stop
a lot
dancing
of
around, Wolf.
Give I know, I'm trying line. To stop dance.
Give us
Did
the
Kirk
bottom
Cousins
line.
Fire you up after?
I that? Wouldn't fork them after this week.
Ooh. Well, I wouldn't either. I mean,
All right.
They got the win. Let's see what happens next week now.
But only because the division
you
is so
guys
bad.
Chowder heads that were saying, gotta be bold.
Oh, no, I wanted to fork them last week, but it's
like
now
I'm being
bold
for teams I don't like.
Well, so that's what
I'm still regretting being bullied into forking the Jaguars.
Bullied
by Dan into forking the Jaguars.
What happened? Why were you bullied?
No,
Dan made me promise that if they lose to someone, I would fork them.
I didn't,
even though I knew that the Colts are an awful football team.
I did not put a gun to your head. They got beat by a crappy team.
You guilted me into it.
They've been getting beat by crappy teams all year. By the way, they almost blew this game.
If you cue up the producer enough times to say it's about me, it's going to make me feel guilty, and then I go along with your bullying.
I did not.
It's about me.
I was waiting for it.
All right. That's it. Colleen, are you leaving us now? We're going to get to the Sunday night game next. So we're going to say goodbye to you.
Okay, yeah, I'm leaving.
Yeah, you
don't, have to say goodbye. I'm leaving.
You want to go surfing.
Unless you want to just hang out, you know, for another hour.
Yeah, I'm gonna go home and watch the rest of this game.
Well, you did a very nice job.
Thank you.
There's no need for a committee to decide whether
I'm not going to get forked.
Colleen needs to be forked. She is talented.
There we go.
Successful.
Stop there.
And exciting. Talent here at NFL Media. And we would love to have you back next week.
Thanks. I'll come by.
Perfect.
You don't even need to invite her next time.
You like that?
Oh, so she's just like,
she's just there.
On the old sked?
Well, someone tweeted at me. It's like, you know, I want, you know, let's push to have Colleen be a permanent part of the show. Well, how much more permanent does it need to be?
All right, how about this?
Permanent.
Okay.
You're here. You're part of the show. You were part of the heroes at the beginning. It wasn't like,
this
and a
great.
Special guest. It was just like Colleen Wolf, Chris Wessling, and me. And the
actions speak louder.
And?
Colleen, we'll see you next week.
Okay.
And that takes us to Sunday Night Football and the Carolina Panthers. Get excited, Charlotte, and the surrounding areas. Your team is 6-0, a 27-16 win over the Philadelphia Eagles. This is a game in which Cam Newton threw for almost 200 yards and a touchdown. Jay Stewart, our boy, 24 carries, 125 yards. a nice little performance. Not what you would call, Greg, the most exciting game in the world, but this was what good teams do when they don't have, you know, big impact players are going crazy, but they're a better team. They take care of business in their building, and that's what Carolina did.
I think it was exciting if you're Ron Rivera and you're watching Kawhi Short bust through the line, you're watching a team run the ball. This is basically Ron Rivera's vision, and I'm thinking when we're watching the Eagles get the ball at the end of the game with a couple chances to tie or maybe win the game, and they don't even really get close. This was the old Eagles that, you know, you expected so much out of their offense, and instead the Panthers just totally shut them down. They didn't even cross midfield threatening to score.
Talk about the old Eagles. This looks like the old 2013 Panthers. Mm. That the ones that stole our hearts and we made them the team of ATL.
I would be fine with it if they were the team of ATL right now. I've never fallen out of love. They say your first love is the toughest one to break. I mean, I still love watching Cam Newton and some fun defense.
The genius has no clothes.
Oh, I see what you did there.
How long you been sitting on that one?
I actually just came up with it. I'm very proud. But we once said, or once believed potentially, that Chip Kelly's offense was so good that it was quarterback-proof. And they do not have a good quarterback. Sam Bradford is not good. We get a weekly reminder of it. Tonight was just another one. And it just goes to show Chip Kelly, for all his smart thinking and different ways of running offenses and getting more plays in a quicker amount of time, he's just like every other coach. If you don't have the quarterback, you don't have the team. Sorry, Chip, you're not special. That's all I got.
Well, it's if you don't have the quarterback and you don't have the receivers, I mean, drops killed them throughout the night, including Miles Austin.
What's going on with Jordan Matthews, by the way? He was supposed to have a breakout season, can't catch anything.
Right, he's dropping passes. Miles Austin, this is the second game that he's basically ended with a drop, if I remember the Falcons' opener correctly. The offensive line isn't playing well. You lose Jason Peters, 7-time Pro Bowler, in what looked to be a serious back injury. So there's a lot of things going on. It's not even just the quarterback. But I think that's to a credit of the Panthers, who have played good defense for 6 straight weeks now. So it doesn't surprise me. Now we wanted to see the Panthers play some decent teams. They have, and they've taken care of business.
We talked about in the preview that they have 4 legitimate stars on their defense with Thomas Davis, Luke Kuechly, Josh Norman, who's one of the best cornerbacks in the league, and Kawhi Short, who's going to get all-pro consideration at defensive tackle.
And the crazy thing is they haven't gotten almost anything out of Kuechly and Davis this year. Davis really hasn't had a good year, I don't think.
What?
Until tonight, I don't think he's really played particularly well, and Kuechly has just been hurt. I think they both had very good nights on Sunday Night Football, and Norman's playing outstanding. Kawhi Short, now he gets a little national attention, and I think he'll start getting that Pro Bowl love.
It's become a bit of a tiresome narrative. We've been talking about it. Cam Newton, MVP. Maybe, again, the numbers aren't there, but he is lording over a 6-0 team now. What did you guys see from Cam today? Did you like what you saw?
3 interceptions. I mean, to me, it's a kind of a game that I think about with a lot of this MVP talk. He's been very good, but I think it's a full team, and he's not doing as much as Tom Brady's doing, or Aaron Rodgers, or Andy Dalton, for that matter. I love Cam Newton. I've always loved watching him. I just don't think he's quite there.
It's kind of gotten to the point where if you don't, you know, shower Cam Newton with praise, you're somehow greatly overlooking what he's been able to do. But it just happens that there are other quarterbacks that are at a much higher level.
He's a top 5 quarterback.
But you're playing at the level.
What level? What?
Top 5. That's where I've had him. Top 5 right now.
When you got somebody playing at the level of Tom Brady, you can talk about Cam Newton all you want, but there's one guy atop the MVP race now, and it's Tom Brady. Sorry, Cam.
No doubt.
I love seeing Jonathan Stewart having such a nice couple of games here. I think he's run hard all year. He doesn't have the same explosion, but he's just, I mean, he made a big play today.
He doesn't even have the same explosion he had down the stretch last year.
He's not cheating them on any runs.
No, I agree.
And you take a look at the upcoming schedule here for the Panthers. They got home to Indianapolis. Nice spot for them there to get to 7-0, you would think. They would be in good shape. And then here's the game. Now, we want to figure out how good are the Panthers. Home against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. That's a good game to watch.
Sunday, I'm already week 9. Forward to that.
Yeah, that's a great one. Maybe throw Wes a bone, give him that game. Unless you want it, Greg, but I'll stay out of this.
I'll take it. And by it's funny that we're just looking past the old Cam Newton, Andrew Luck on Monday Night Football. Now, there's a game for some narratives. We won't even get into it, but there's a narrative game if I ever heard one. Andrew Luck at his lowest moment in his career, I would say, and Cam Newton riding higher than he ever has.
I've already started the narrative. Look at that.
There you go.
I've enjoyed this podcast tonight especially because there is a lot of scientist heat. But it comes out of a place of begrudging respect, yes or no?
It's not even begrudging respect. We were having heat even when the cameras are off about nonsensical issues.
All right.
Just how we do.
Okay. That's it. Those are the games of Sunday, and it was a fun week. It was great talking about it with you guys. I love talking football with you guys. And so I'm thankful. It's not Thanksgiving yet, but I'm saying that I'm thankful. Mark Sessler will be on a plane if he goes to sleep tonight and then gets up and then makes the flight. A lot of things.
If he goes to
sleep.
There's like a Ryan Mallett thing going on.
And nothing weird happens on the flight.
Nothing weird on the flight. No
international
landings.
Incidents.
Things have happened on flights.
If all that comes, no incident, he will be back in that chair on Tuesday. The group will be reunited. But thank you very much to Colleen Wolf for joining us for the full show, or just about. She did awesome. And Connie Fox, they call her.
Oh, yeah.
So, thank you to Colleen, and thank you guys. We will be back on Tuesday with another big show going over Monday night and look ahead to Thursday Night Football. Maybe our fork discussion will continue. This is Dan Hansa signing off for the mailman, the boss, and TD behind the glass. Till Tuesday!